Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Thank you, Monica. I was actually standing out there. For those of you that see me on Sunday mornings, I'm normally standing out there on the front porch, and I was talking with somebody, and I was like, just look at this. This is absolutely wonderful. This is such a wonderful world. And so here I come in, not knowing what you're going to play. So that was absolutely spectacular. Thank you, thank you. Thank you for a great opening treatment, because that's my talk today, so I'm very excited that it leads right in there. But do you know you stand in a powerful place? You stand in a powerful place right now. I stand in a powerful place right now. How many of you feel like you're standing in a powerful place this very moment? Wow! You've been coming to the center for a while, so you know that. More hands than I expected, because there's a lot of people out there that aren't feeling like they're in such a powerful place this very minute. They don't feel so much power. So I want you, by the time you leave here, you're going to sense that you're going to standing in a powerful place, no matter what's going on in your world, no matter what's going on in your conditions right now. I've been really excited about giving this talk for over a month now. I've been reading several books. You know me, I'm constantly reading Thomas Troward. I'm constantly reading the Bible. How can I get a different point of view of that? I'm constantly reading Holmes. I try to read out there in the general world what's going on. And I read an article in the New York Times about two Jewish holidays and how they follow one another. And I thought, you know what? What I am reading is all exactly the same thing. They're all saying exactly the same thing. But before I get into that, I want to start with a quote by Ernest Holmes. Now, Ernest Holmes is the founder of the Science of Mind teaching, and he released his first book, The Science of Mind, in 1926, and then they had a re-edited version that came out in 1938. So about 80 years ago, Ernest Holmes says on the second page of The Science of Mind, so when you open up the book, you kind of get this introductory paragraph, but on page two, he's jumping into exactly what this teaching is all about. On page two, he says, the great love of the universe must be one with the great law of its own being. And we approach love through law. This then is the teaching, love and law. As the love of God is perfect, so the law of God is perfect. We must understand both. We have to understand what the love of the universe is. We have to understand what the law of the universe is. Love and law. And you know what? We stand right between these two. We stand right between love and we stand right between law. And if you're standing there, this is where I want you to sense that you're standing in a very powerful position. With God, the love of God over here, and the law of God on the other side, that is a very powerful place. If we but knew it. Most people don't know it. Most people don't know this. They think the place they are standing is a poor place, or a weak place, or a sick place. But that is because they're looking at the material world. They're looking out at the world of effect and saying, this is what my world is, but that's not your real world. That is not your real world. If at the very same moment that you are standing in those places, you were to sense the spiritual aspect of yourself, it would not see those things. It would only see perfection. That's all that it would see. It would see perfection, richness, abundance, creativity, love. Even if you were standing there and somebody was saying unloving things to you, it is up to you to understand that love is there in that situation. It is up to you when a doctor comes down and gives you a diagnosis to say something that you're unhealthy, to understand I am healthy at the center of my being. It's up to us to see that, not the world of effect or what we're hearing or anything like that. We have to do this. So here we are standing between love and law, and for thousands of years has humanity been trying to tell humanity about this divinity, God on one side, law on the other. humanity has been telling humanity. So the article that I read about, and I'm not Jewish, I might mispronounce these words a little bit, but the article was talking about Passover and Shavuot. I'm trying to get it right, she told me this morning. So Passover was a couple months ago. Shavuot was a couple weeks ago. Passover is the Jewish holiday that celebrates the liberation of Jewish people from slavery in Egypt. Shavuot is a Jewish holiday just celebrated a couple weeks ago that commemorates the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. That's when Moses came down from the mountain, the Smoky Mountain, and he has the two tablets with him, and he's bringing the law down. So what we're talking about, this person that wrote this article was just saying it's very interesting to see what happens between those two holidays. The one that announces freedom and the one that announces law. And there's a 7-week period, 49 to 50 days between those two holidays. And there's a reason of why we're standing between those holidays. Now, biblical scholars all argue if this slavery was a factor or not. And if you remember my great talk a few months ago, I did a great talk a few months ago about the good book, and I put it here. And if the good book is here, and you just read it from page to page to page and just keep it right here, you're not going to get the meaning out of it. What I talked about a few weeks ago is when you read this book, you need to not read it here. You need to read it all the way up here. You need to bring all of this in it. This was when you read it word for word, that's the literal interpretation. But it was not written literally. It was written with spiritual ideas in mind. Spiritual ideas are up here. So when you read the literal world, and for thousands of years have they been going, this is it, this is the word, we can't change it, you can't do that, you're missing 75% of what's happening in this book. 75% of that book is happening up here where it was written in the spiritual world. So that's why I'm saying you have to understand it's a whole lot. When they talk about Egypt, they're not talking about Egypt. When they're talking about Moses, they're not talking about Moses. So that's why I'm saying it says Egypt, it says Moses. But when you understand Egypt and when you understand Moses, you understand what it is. The same thing when it says, talks about Christ, it's not talking about Christ. And when it's talking about Mary, it's not talking about Mary. But what it is doing is saying all the different aspects of you and your consciousness. What's your Egyptian consciousness? What's your Moses consciousness? What's your Christ consciousness? What are all those? I have a Ruth consciousness. I have an Isaac consciousness. We have all of those things. So if you want to read the book down here, you go ahead and read about Isaac and Abraham and everything. But when you read it up here, you understand that I am Abraham. I am Moses. I am Christ. We have to understand that aspect of what's going on with the book. That's reading it with the spiritual interpretations, which what the writers wrote in there. So read literally, which a lot of the world wants you to read this book as, Exodus happened around 1441 B.C. And then 7 weeks later, Shavuot, meaning 7 weeks, were the commandments brought down from the mountain. This is literal. Spiritual, which is what they were really trying to say, is something much greater. Passover is about freedom and God's ability to shape history. Passover is about freedom. And Shavuot is about God's gift of law. So here we have a story that we've been telling for 3,400 years where people are trying to explain not a literal translation of events, but first that you have freedom. This is the love of God. And the second, there is a law. You have a law of God. And you stand right between those two, the love of God and the law of God. And that is what happened when you were going from that 7-week time period from the second day of Passover to June 2nd was Shavuot. In that time period, something was happening there. So this counting symbolizes the movement from Egypt to Sinai. Now when you pull out your metaphysical Bible dictionary, you see that Egypt represents bondage to the material world. When Moses was in Egypt, he was in a palace, he was with pharaohs, there was gold, there were beautiful women all the way around. He was recognizing all of those things in the world of effect. So Egypt represents bondage to the material world. Egypt represents bondage to your cell phone. I was in a meeting last week where the facilitator of the meeting asked to collect all cell phones during the meeting. What do you think happened in the meeting? It was not happy. They were not happy. They were attached to their material things. They did not want to let go of their material things. In Egypt, things are wonderful with our material things. We like to hold on to those. But the attachment to the material world, the attachment to the phone, is truly one of bondage. When we're holding on to those things so tightly, we're in bondage to those things. This is the body consciousness. This is recognizing this is real, my phone is real, and things like that. My body is real, my body and its effects are the truth of my being. Where my body is my conditions. That's my conditions. That's all that it is. It's not the truth of me. Egypt was the place of all that gold and that power. Impressed with the material world is what it is when we're in Egypt. Now, when I first came into this teaching, I was 29 going into 30. And it was, I was questioning what is my definition of God. Because I was looking around the world, and for me, people were saying, and my definition was, it was a God that was full, had an armful of lightning bolts. And not only was it a God that had an armful of lightning bolts, all the lightning bolts were headed straight for me. So I was like, walked out one day, what a wonderful world this is. What a beautiful sunset. This can't be the definition of God, to have something like that show up. But at 29, guess what? I was working at a great law firm. I was driving my 944 red Porsche top down. I had my polo shirts on every single day. And then I walk into this teaching, and they're telling me, let go of Egypt. Let go of the material world. And then I realized that, yes, I was in bondage by those things. I was in bondage by those things. Yet Moses comes and says, let my people go. Let my people go. The small book says, yes, the Jewish people had to leave. But how do we let go of something of the material world? So it's not slaves he's asking to be freed. He is announcing the freedom from the material world. They are let go, and we have the Jewish holiday of Passover that represents that freedom. All of us have that freedom. So they cross the divided Red Sea. That's a whole nother talk someday, because literal part of the sea, metaphysically, you have to wait for what that means. But it's a whole different story. To get to Sinai. And Sinai is where the place was, law was established. The place where Moses came down the mountain with the tablets. This place represents in us a high place in consciousness where we come into conscious communion with God. That's what Sinai is. That's where we come into conscious communion with God. So we've gone from the material world, looking around the gold, the Porsches, the beautiful women and everything. We cross the river. We come over here. We're in Sinai, which means conscious communion with God, which is a higher level of understanding, a higher level of thinking. No longer am I looking at my world of effect things, but I'm looking up here and I'm in my conscious communion with God. So we go from the holiday of freedom, of letting go of all those world of effect items, looking at all of my conditions, thinking my conditions are my life, and we go over to this conscious communion with God, but also where we're establishing law in the holiday. So this is not a story of geology, it's a story of God's freedom and God's law. That's what those two holidays represent. It is a story Holmes spoke of as all is love, all is law. It's exactly the same quote. The exodus from Egypt and the receiving of the law at Sinai have permeated cultures beyond Judaism for centuries. Now there's a lower level, I'm saying step all the way up here. Governments have stepped in and started saying all is love and all is law. So what they try to do is governments try to set up saying freedom, freedom, freedom. So we set up the Declaration of Independence and all of our people are free and all of our people are free. But the laws that they put in place may not be so free, if you know what I mean. Especially 240 years ago, they weren't so free. We've gotten more free. We're still in bondage. We're still doing that. So the governments are trying to grasp this understanding between love and law. Yes, you have freedom, but you can't do this, you can't do that, and everything. I just came back from Hawaii, and I took a great class where they were talking about the place of refuge, because so many people had to swim to this island. If you swam to this island and made it, you were okay. You had this place of refuge. But if you broke the law, they had so many laws in place, like you can't eat with... men can't eat with women, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and the same laws that we have. You can't sell liquor on Sunday, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. So the laws down here at a government level are a little bit lower than what I'm truly trying to get across to you this morning. But the same thing is happening with that struggle between everybody getting freedom and the laws we're emplacing. This is why we have what's going on in Syria right now. This is why we have what's going on in Iraq right now. This is why we have what's going on in Ukraine right now. They're saying, our people are free, our people are free, but no, we want these laws in place, and the Sunnis are this, and the Shiites are that. And so they're placing it, they're working at a lower level. Believe it or not, they're still down here in Egypt. They're still working down here in a material world trying to control things. Because when you step above that and go to this true law of understanding, up here, you don't have that. You don't have that. The second point that brings us to light about reading about all is love and all is law is Judge Thomas Troward. So when you come in this teaching, your rote answer when you sit before the ministerial panels is, what were the three great influences on Ernest Holmes? And they are the Bible, they are Troward, they are Emerson, but I like to add a fourth, Plotinus, because if you see the second most quoted person in the Science of Mind textbook behind Emerson is Plotinus. So if you haven't studied Plotinus, please do. We did that in the practitioner class. We had a great time reading a book over the summer on Plotinus, Return to the One, if you want to read it. So the second point that brings me to the slide is reading on Thomas Troward. So if you understand what the teaching of the Science of Mind is about, Ernest Holmes was inspired by these people. So Troward has the Bible story of where he came up with love and law. And so let me go there with that. He was writing in the late 1800s, and he explains the building of Solomon's Temple, which was built around 964 B.C. So we went from 1400 B.C., now we're up to 964 B.C., and I want you to see where the Bible's saying the same thing, that it is all love and it is all law. Humanity has been telling humanity about its divinity for all these thousands of years. Now, King 1 goes into detail of the building of the temple and explains about the two pillars at the entrance to Solomon's temple. Now, you know me well enough. We're not talking about a literal temple. I just explained that to you. We're speaking of the temple here in mind. Is what we're talking about. And before going into this temple, there are two pillars, Yakin and Boaz. Yakin is on one side, Boaz is on the other. Kings gives dimensions, Troward gives explanations of all the dimensions, but more importantly, he said you got to go to the name, because just like you have a Moses consciousness, you have a Yakin consciousness, you have a Boaz consciousness. Yakin is the intensified form of Yak, which is one, and him, or high, is only. So it's one only. So it means one only, the all-embracing unity, law. That is what this means. And Boaz comes from the root of the word awaz, or voice, or choice, or volition, or freedom, is what it means. And it stands for the action of intelligent volition. So you have the law on one side with Yakin. You have this freedom, this volition, this voice on the other side, which is Boaz. And so it stands between those two. I did some great reading on Boaz too, where another biblical scholar said Boaz really represents... Boaz was a very rich person. And he was so much in love with Ruth. And so what Boaz did to stay in Ruth's love and everything like that, trying to keep property in Ruth's name and her family name, some land became available that was Ruth, but Ruth couldn't afford to purchase it or anything like that. It was been running in her family and she couldn't do it. So Boaz stepped in and bought the land for Ruth. He quote unquote is the redeemer. What he did is he came in and said, you know what? I'm just going to hold this until you can catch up and buy the property yourself and keep it in your family. It's the Redeemer. So it's the same thing with this freedom that's given to us. This freedom is given to us, but you know what? It's being held until we catch up and understand that that freedom is there. That is what Boaz is doing for us, not thousands of years ago, but today. Boaz is holding this understanding of freedom for us until we can catch up and get that. So the only way of entering into this temple is through passing between these two pillars of the universe and realizing the combined action of law and volition, law and freedom. We cannot enter the temple without passing through these two pillars. And once inside, the mysteries of the temple will unfold. Once you pass through these two pillars, the mysteries of your life will unfold beautifully. But you have to understand what passing through these two temples are. So what's this thing that we're doing? To pass through these two temples, we can increase the livingness of our lives. We can increase it. We can use this law positively, or we can use it negatively. We are the workers of the law. We're the ones that have to walk through the temple. I was outside earlier this morning talking about how we use this law. Hitler came in and used this law. He's standing between love and law. But his freedom, his choice, his volition was using the law in a negative way. The universe just responds and says yes. Whatever we put into the law, the universe responds. The Buddha came along and said, I'm going to use this law. And the universe says yes. So this freedom over here of how we use the law is a wide variety of how we can use that freedom. So, Troward later explained it as this. He's saying it's balancing the two aspects of us. Personality, volition, freedom, and law. The personality of us is the freedom, the choice, what we get to choose, to think about. This is the love of the universe. And you've heard me say it up here before, all that I have is thine. That's what the universe is saying to us. And this is balanced with the law. The law that works the same way every time. Whether what we put between the two pillars is intelligent or unintelligent, the law will execute. April is going to be doing a great, and the practitioners are going to be doing a great class in the winter, starting in January, called The Power of Decision. And it's exactly saying the same thing. Decide to live richly. Decide to live happily. Decide to live lovingly. Because whatever you put into the law is going to go ahead and take it. So we are being taught to put something intelligent into the law versus something not intelligent into the law. Something not intelligent placing into the law still takes it, whether you're thinking about it or not, is worry. If you're sitting over here worrying, guess what? The law's over here taking the worry and giving you things to worry about. The law works perfectly. But that's an unintelligent use of the law, is worry. So I catch myself, I know I'm the only one at 4 a.m. lying in my bed, not worrying. So what do? I catch myself, David, that's an unintelligent use of the law. Think of something else. And so my normal 4 a.m. stuff is to go, God is and so am I. As in the universal, so in the individual. I just go, God is and so am I, to stop my worrying, because I know my worrying is working perfectly within the law. And I need to stop it. I'm doing an unintelligent use of the law. So Troward says we can set aside one idea for another. Go higher in our understanding. And the same law at that higher level is once again ready to execute. Whether I put in the worry down here at this level of the law, or whether I put in God is an abundant universe into the law, it doesn't matter. This law is going to take it and work it no matter what. What's my level that I'm placing into that between those two pillars? So Joachim and Boaz are not simply two pillars built in 964 BC, and they were finally written about in 800 BC in Kings. It's actually a spiritual story and telling us how love works through law. Love on one pillar, law in the other. We've got to go between those two to get into the mysteries of what's in the temple. And the mysteries of what's in the temple is my worry unfolding inside the temple, or is my abundance and my vitality and my creativity unfolding within the temple? And this third story comes along with Ernest Holmes in 1938 saying the same thing. The great love of the universe must be one with the great law of the universe. The love of God is perfect. The law of God is perfect. That is at the universal level. And at the individual level, and the meaning of a true metaphysical teaching is the study of life and the nature of law governed and directed by thought. What are you thinking? Holmes tells us love rules through law. He says, all is love, yet all is law. Love is the divine givingness. Law is the way, the unfoldment. Love is spontaneous. Law is impersonal. It doesn't say, David, that might be a bad idea you're placing into the law. It's very impersonal. It does not care what I place into the law. It doesn't say whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. When we gain a broader perspective, we shall see that life contains two fundamental characteristics which people have been speaking of for all these thousands of years. We shall see that there's an infinite spirit operating through an infinite and immutable law. Love points the way, law makes the way possible. Love points the way, freedom is granted in Passover. Law makes the way possible. Shavuot says the law is given. Love points the way, Boaz, voice, my voice, and Yakin, the one, only, law. So bring us forward all these thousands of years to 2014, right here on June 22nd, 2014. What does this have to do with me? Well, you are standing in a very powerful place this moment. You are standing between love and law this very moment. For those of you that didn't raise your hand when I first asked that question, I do not feel like I'm standing in a powerful place. We could be looking at our world of effect things. You don't know what I have at work waiting for me tomorrow. I've got to see my boss. I've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow with something about a lump in my breast. I've got appointment with my mortgage banker to tell me whether I can get the loan to buy my house or not. But if you saw my bank account, you knew what was going on. Oh, well. Or can you understand in that very same world of effect with all of those things going on, your doctor's appointment tomorrow, your appointment with the mortgage banker or anything, what if you used and decided to invoke the law at this level of thinking? It is an abundant universe. It is a loving universe. It's a healthy universe. The universe is very healthy. When you start focusing on these things, you're putting into the same law whether here or here. So here I'm telling you, let us stand right here in this very powerful position. That's where you're standing right now, whether you sense it or not. We are standing between love and law. Our thought is perfectly free and we can use it either constructively or destructively. Thought, which is in line with the unity of the great whole, will produce correspondingly harmonious results. And thought, which is disruptive of the great principle of unity, will produce correspondingly disruptive results. Worry does that. So long as we restrict ourselves to the mere recollection of observed facts, which is the low bank account, what my body looks like, what I'm afraid my boss is going to say, if that's what we do, so long as we look around us and make choices based on our world of effect, things we see, so long as we look at our bank account, our bodies, our lives, and then we make a decision, there will be no progress. There will be no progress. The law takes that which we have given it by our observable facts and produces the like. Lump on my breast, guess what the doctor's going to say tomorrow? But the good news is, the same law is standing at the ready when we finally get a better idea. Boaz is standing there announcing your freedom. The minute that you do there, I have held that freedom for you all along until you caught up with that understanding of freedom. Boaz is standing there waiting for you. That's the good news. One of my favorite quotes from the Bible comes from Peter, 1 Peter 1:13. Gird up the loins of your mind. I love this one. Gird the loins of your mind. And what is he saying? Exactly the same thing. Gird the loins of your mind between this side and this side, between love and law. What's going in here and what's not going in here? Now, gird up the loins really meant they had the tunics. You have to go back to first century where they were wearing the tunics and they had the belt here. And if you were going into battle, how you had to gird up your loins is you took that tunic like this and you brought it and you tucked it into the belt so that you had freedom in the legs and you weren't going to trip over your tunic. That's what girding was. And so they knew in first century when Peter's writing this saying, gird up the loins of your mind. Prepare your mind for battle. Get ready because there's going to be a lot of thoughts that you want to let go through those two pillars and come out into the mysteries of the temple, whether they're good or bad. So, gird the loins, prepare your mind for battle. You are the one that has to know when to allow the good thoughts in and when to not allow the bad or negative thoughts to come in. When to stand there and put up that tunic and say, okay, I'm not going to worry anymore. Gird the loins of your mind. Peter continues saying, like obedient children, do not be conformed to the desires you once held in ignorance, which means everything at the world of effect. Instead, as he who called you is holy, be holy yourself. Instead of looking at all your observable desires or all your world of effect things, be he who called you as holy, be holy yourself. As in the universal, so in the individual is what Peter's saying here. Understand, be holy as you yourself is holy. Understand the perfection, the abundance of the universe is your abundance. The perfection of the universe is your perfection. Understand that. Keep announcing that. Be clear about it. As in the universal abundance, so it is with me. As the health of the universe, so it is with my health. Now, I was at work this week, and a woman came up to me and said, David, I am craving a cigarette. I really want a cigarette really bad. So I'm just going, as in the universal, so in the individual, as in the universal. I said, do you think God wants a cigarette? Can you see God sitting up there smoking? And she laughed. And I said, well, so in the individual. God doesn't smoke, so you don't smoke. Just go ahead and put that out there. And then, of course, she walked away from me saying, I actually see him with a big doobie. So, anyway, I tried. I tried to bring my spiritual, universal self. So we can generalize this whole position as this. When we first observe the working of the law under the conditions spontaneously provided by nature, it appears to limit us. If we look at everything around here, and we think it's freedom and everything. Actually, like I said, I lived to be 29 using the law perfectly. But I was using the law of averages perfectly. I thought for sure that, you know, good things happen and bad things happen. Some people get rich, some people are poor, something or this. And I said, okay, the law of averages works perfectly. And when I'm standing between my freedom of making a decision and the law, guess what happens? The law of averages works perfectly. But you come to this teaching and you say, no, I'm going to institute the law of cause and effect here. So you institute law of cause and effect up here. Guess what? The same law that took my law of average understanding and thoughts takes the law of cause and effect into effect as well. So it's then that I started realizing, let me raise my consciousness. So when we think that we're down here and getting those, but when we seek the principle behind this, when we see that the law works, we learn what conditions to place into law and to direct its energy to accomplish definite purposes. That's when we start announcing our health. That's when we announce all those things. The limitation in our lives, the powerlessness we feel in our lives, if we're standing and not feeling like we're standing in a place of power, is not a limitation in the law, but within ourselves. But the minute we stand before this great law, shall vault pillar, and specialize our volition, our freedom, our better choices, we will see immense powers that were always latent there within us come forward. All the mysteries that are in that temple are there awaiting for you to use this law. The law itself never changes. But we can specialize it by realizing the principle involved and providing better thoughts while standing there. We give definite direction to the action of law. That is exactly what spiritual mind treatment is all about. I love how she gets up here talking about spiritual mind treatment and affirmative prayer. What we do is we give definite direction to the action of law. What we're doing in spiritual mind treatment, what she all did for us up here, was she started announcing the law up here and recognizing this. And she said, I release this to law, knowing it is so. What we're doing is specifically that. It's only as we grasp this true relation between Passover and Shavuot. It is only when we grasp the true relation between Yakin and Boaz. It is only when we grasp the true relation between love and law that we can enter into this temple, either on our own individuality or on the boundless universe which we live. We have the choice. If we work with the law, we shall find that our word will become more and more the word of power. We are powerful people right where we stand. Do you know right where you're standing in a powerful place? It is wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. So let us take this into our own consciousness, into our own knowing. We've come this morning from different places of the city all to be right here in this one place where, yes, we are going to talk about where all is love and all is law. The love of the universe is forever giving itself an infinite number of things for us to have unfold in our lives. We see them all around us. But we're raising our sights higher this morning. We're raising our sights to this understanding that the way my life is showing up today is only from the way I used the law yesterday. It is on this day that I stand in a powerful place between love and law and love myself greatly. By loving myself greatly, I'm loving the universe greatly. By loving myself greatly, I'm loving God greatly. And by doing this, the law takes my voice, my freedom, my personalness, and has it unfold in the mysteries of the temple. It unfolds in the livingness of my life. So it is on this day that I understand that I'm standing in this powerful place and I choose greater thoughts about myself. Automatically, the law works the way the law works. It's immutable. So it's on this day that I choose healthy thoughts about my body. I no longer use negative language about it. It is on this day that I choose healthy thoughts about abundance. It is an abundant universe, and I announce that abundance, and I stop looking around for the world of effect things showing that. It is on this day that I announce the creativity of the universe is my creativity, and my career is spectacular. I let go of all the small ideas about how many people are applying for the same job, or I'm not going anywhere in my position. That's not the truth of us. The truth of us is the creativity of the universe is our creativity. And love. The love of the universe is our love. This love doesn't have to do with somebody else out there. It has to do with a universal sense of love within each one of us. The love of the universe resides within each one of us. Whether we feel it or not, Boaz is there, the Redeemer, holding it for us until we recognize its presence. It is there. It is a very loving universe, and I am a loving person this very moment. We let go of the things of yesterday. We let go of the things of our small thoughts. We let all that go and grab onto the greater. The greater is the universal aspect of ourselves. Humanity is talking about humanity and telling it about its divinity for thousands of years, and we understand that this morning. We are divine this very moment. This law is divine as well. It's two aspects, all one within us. We give great thanks for this understanding, and I release my word to law, knowing that when we walk out of these doors, we're walking out of two pillars into a whole new temple of life. The mysteries of God befolding before every single step that we take, mainly because we're putting these greater ideas into mind, knowing that the law executes perfectly. I release this word to law, knowing this is the truth for every single one of us. We stand in a powerful place this very moment, and so it is.